Beaver Roundup, the 60th version of it, is happening, even as you're listening to this week's episode. It is Dillingham's annual celebration, an event that all communities seem to have, and such events are often rooted in something important to the community's past. I have shared before that in my hometown of Ellsworth, Kansas, it's Cowtown Days, and in another small Kansas community I taught in, it was Czech Fest, a nod to the town's Czechoslovakian heritage. Again, every community seems to have one, and that's been true of every town I've ever lived in, irrespective of size. I have to confess, I've never been much of a community celebration sort, though not because I think they're bad or anything. Quite the opposite. I think it's a good and right thing for a community to want to celebrate its history. I'm just really an introvert at heart, and celebrations usually lend themselves to crowds of people, at least if they're meeting with any level of success at all. So this week is Beaver Roundup, once again, and this year the weather is shaping up to be quite cooperative, at least at the point that I'm recording this episode. Sunny in mid-20s, with plenty of snow. That's pretty hard to find fault with for a celebration that centers on winter activities. This week, in honor of Beaver Roundup, let's consider a hodgepodge of topics that tie to our community's big-ticket annual celebration. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. A week ago, in trying to track down potential historical information about Beaver Roundup, I came across a website called Worth a Damn, Martinez Beavers. It seems to be a well-meaning site, if somewhat inaccurate, that promotes the protection of beavers along a very specific small drainage in a town in California. The reason I say inaccurate is that last year, they had an article written by one of their board members about our Beaver Roundup, which is how they came up on a Google search. It was that article specifically that held a good number of inaccuracies, among them that last year's was our 70th celebration, and that people celebrate the fur trade, and how historically trappers would target killing yearling beavers as they set out each spring to make a life of their own. They also questioned why a wildlife refuge would be a sponsor for such an event, and how odd it was that we would promote killing animals. Well, as the outreach guy for the refuge, you can imagine how that recounting a beaver roundup and the refuge's role in it made me bristle just a bit. In fact, I fired off an email to point out their errors, though a lot more tactfully than it was forming in my mind. For those that might be totally new to Dillingham, fresh off the plane as it were, it is, again, our 60th anniversary. No one I know targets killing younger beavers and, for that matter, they stay with the parents through the first nearly 2 years. As for the refuge, we are participants, not sponsors, and we participate because it's good business. We're a part of the community, and we want the community and surrounding area to know that. And the killing part? Well, I know you've likely heard me mention on this show before that hunting and subsistence uses are considered priority uses of refuge wildlife, as long as those populations are healthy. In other words, yeah, we support harvesting wildlife, to include beavers, which are very, very abundant across southwest Alaska. Irrespective of area, across the whole of North America, the beaver, Castor canadensis in the system of binomial nomenclature, has often been the sought-after fur-bearing species, so it's no real surprise that it's at the heart of our celebration. So, what do you know about them as animals? It comes as a surprise to some folks that beavers are just giant mice, sharing the order Rodentia with mice and rats and guinea pigs and other such smaller critters. They are our continent's largest rodent, and are second in size globally only to the larger capybaras of South America. If you consider the incisors, the front teeth, it makes perfect sense, except for the fact beavers are so much bigger. Adult beavers in Alaska usually weigh somewhere between 40 and 60 pounds, though extremely old fat ones can sometimes weigh close to triple digits. In fact, I personally caught a few over 60, and one that weighed 72 pounds, though that was in Kansas. I know a guy in Virginia that caught one that weighed in at a whopping 106 pounds. They are between 3 and 4 feet long, and adults will have a tail that's 10 to 12 inches in length. Most folks will recognize that they're some type of brown in color, and that can range from a light dusty brown to almost black, although a chestnut brown is the most common color phase. They have small front legs and muscular hind legs that sport webbed feet. The tail is dark gray to black and broad, and is one of its most recognizable traits, along with those distinctive orange-colored rodent incisors, which, by the way, in case you've ever wondered, are orange from a high iron content that's found in the enamel on the front of the teeth. As I mentioned, beavers have been the go-to animal over much of the history of the past several hundred years for North America. Their fur is durable, warm, and looks good, and their meat can be very good table fare. Add to that the fact that they are often found in large numbers over the entirety of areas of good habitat, and they are a fairly easy animal to trap or otherwise harvest. Beavers have been an area resource for the native population for longer than anyone will ever be able to pin down. Much of European exploration of Alaska was driven by the fur trade, which often targeted beavers specifically, for the reasons I mentioned. Even as that was happening, in the 1700s and 1800s across Alaska, much of the western two-thirds of the lower 48 was opened up and explored for the same reason, capitalizing on the fur trade, and specifically beaver hides. During the 1800s, across much of Canada and the American West, beaver furs were so heavily traded that they became a unit of currency unto themselves. Beaver hides were called plews and were traded for needed supplies such as clothing, tools, blankets, traps, guns, powder, and food. In Canada, in the 1700s, the Hudson Bay Company, at one time a large fur trading monopoly of a company, had what they called the made beaver, a unit of currency in which one quality adult winter beaver was one made beaver, and they had metal coins to trade which represented made beavers, as well as fractional coins for halves and quarters. So a lot of folks in a lot of places understand the value of beavers, not just those of us who will celebrate them this week in Dillingham. Have you ever considered how those trappers came about the beavers they depended on to provide them with what they needed to live? In more modern times, three of the more common types of traps that can be effective for beavers include snares, body-gripping traps, often generically referred to as conibears, and foothold traps of various sorts. As I said a moment ago, beavers are pretty easy to target and catch, irrespective of which trap type you choose to become proficient at using. What some people call leg-hold traps, the ones I prefer to call foothold traps, were largely brought into the form we see them as today during the early years of the United States in New York by a young blacksmith named Sewell Newhouse. He made his first steel trap at the age of 17 and spent the next several years creating a better trap, working on his design, and learning to temper the steel. Newhouse eventually joined a religious commune called the Oneida Community and continued his trap-building ways there, with traps by the Oneida Community being made well into the 1900s. Whereas the many types of traps that have a root in Newhouse's design are meant to capture the animal by the paw, conibears, body-gripping traps, are meant to kill the animal instantly. While many companies have made and continue to make body-gripping traps, they are often called conibears because of the Canadian inventor who came up with the design, Frank Conibear. Again, any of the trap types I mentioned can be very effective for humanely harvesting beavers, and many people across our area make use of them each and every fall and winter to harvest beavers that they use for fur garments, to sell for income, and for meat for the freezer. One of the things the Martinez beaver folks in California absolutely got right can be found in their tagline, which goes as follows. Because the beaver isn't just an animal, it's an ecosystem. That's very spot on. Through their dams, for which they are famous, and the ponds those dams create, lush areas of habitat are often formed that provide a host of necessary items for living for a great number of wildlife species. Beaver ponds are special places. A beaver pond is often a very happening place when it comes to other animal species. In some places, dams help to reduce erosion and sedimentation. Some of the best times I've spent outdoors over the course of my life have been around habitat created by beavers. Of course, those same dams that can be so wonderful in many places are considered a pain in the rear in other places, such as when they dam up culverts, cause flooding in human use areas, destroy agricultural areas, or inhibit fish passage for migrating spawning species. And if I took the time to read the Martinez Beaver website more carefully, that's probably some of what's at the heart of the matter for people on the other side of the issue as the Martinez folks. The beavers they are looking to save are causing issues for people who really don't have a regard for the animals. For those of us around Bristol Bay, this week, let's rightfully celebrate the fact that we have beavers, and we have them in abundance. Frankly, that's something to consider and appreciate not just this week, but at any point throughout the year. Happy Beaver Roundup, everyone. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.